And now Jacob summoned up Judah. It was a great moment. Deep stillness reigned in and without the tent. It is seldom that such a large assemblage preserves such a profound, motionless, and breathless stillness. The ancient raised his pallid hand towards his fourth son, and Judah stood there, ashamed to his very depth, and bending low his 75-year-old head. Jacob lifted his finger and pointed to him, and spoke, "Judah, you are the one." Yes, it was he, the tortured one, the man utterly unworthy in his own mind, the slave of the mistress who had no lust to lust, but she to him. Sinner and religious man in one. It might be supposed that at 75 years this slavery to desire cannot be so abject, but to suppose so would be wrong. That lasts to the last breath. A little blunter the spear may become, but that ever the mistress frees her slave is unheard of. It does not happen. Deeply abased, Judah bowed himself for the blessing. And now a strange thing came to pass. In proportion as the flood gushed out over him and the oil of the promise poured out upon his head, so his tumultuous feelings were calmed. He listened, and in waxing pride he told himself, "Well, well, in spite of everything, then it was not so bad after all, and apparently it does not affect the blessing. Perhaps it is not taken so seriously. Maybe the purity I so craved was not so indispensable to salvation. Maybe it is all taken in together. Even hell itself is taken in. Who would have thought it? For the oil is trickling down on my head. God have mercy on me, for I am the one." It did not trickle. It poured and roared. Jacob expended himself almost recklessly in blessing Judah. Several of the brothers were cut off with a hasty mention, and Jacob's voice quavered with weakness as he gave it. "Judah, you are the one. Your hand will be in the neck of your enemies. Your brethren shall praise you. Your father's children and the children of all the mothers shall praise in you the Anointed One." Then came the lion. For some time there were only lions, and powerful lion metaphors. Judah was a lion's whelp, from the litter of a lioness, a veritable king of beasts. From the prey he went up ravening. He purred, he mewed, he roared. Upon his desert mountain he withdrew. There he couched and stretched like a maned king, and like the son of a fierce lioness. Who shall dare to rouse him up? No one shall dare. It was surprising to have the father praise as ravening beasts those sons whom he blessed, while those whom he did not bless he blamed unmercifully, precisely because the instruments of cruelty were their familiars. As he himself in his dying weakness had seen himself in the role of a hero with sword and bow, so now he lauded his sons, first the tormented Judah and then little Benjamin, as savage warriors and beasts of prey rejoicing in blood. Remarkably enough, the foible of the mild and intellectual type is a weakness for the heroic. But Jacob did not end his Judah scene on the beast of prey note. The hero he had in view, whom he had sought out long since, was not the kind to make weakness forget itself in hero worship. Shiloh was his name. From lions to him was a long way. Therefore the old man made a transition in his blessing. He introduced a great king. The king sat on his throne, and the scepter leaned between his feet, and should not move from there, nor be taken from him, until the hero appeared, until Shiloh came. To Judah, the king with the scepter between his legs, this promised name was quite new. Indeed, it was a surprise to the whole gathering. They listened amazed. One only among them all knew it, and had waited eagerly to hear it. Our gaze turns involuntarily out to the shadowy profile. She stood there erect, in darkling pride, to hear Jacob pronounce the seed of the woman. From Judah favor should not pass. He should not die, his eyes not close until his greatness should wax immense, for that out of him should come one upon whom all the people should depend, the bringer of peace, the man of the star. Thus it went on beyond all expectation above Judah's abashed head. His own figure, or rather his tribe, mingled, whether intentionally or out of mental confusion, or perhaps out of both, that is to say, the confusion being used to heighten the high-flown poetic effect, it mingled and melted in with Shiloh's figure, so that in this vision of the fullness of the blessing and the grace, no one knew whether Jacob was talking about Judah or about the Promised One. Everything swam in wine. Everything shone red with the red sparkle of the wine before the eyes of the host as they listened. It was a land, a kingdom of this king, where one bound his foal to the vine, and his ass's colt to the choice vine. Were they the vineyards of Hebron, the vine-clad hills of En-Gedi? Into his city he rode on an ass, and on a colt the foal of an ass. There was nothing but drunken desire as of red wine at the sight of him, and he himself was like a drunken wine god treading the press, high-kilted, exalted. The blood of the wine sprinkled his apron, and the red juice of the grape his garment. Lovely was he as he trod, wading and dancing the dance of the wine-press, lovely above all mankind, as white as snow, as red as blood, and as black as ebony. Jacob's voice died away. His head bobbed down, his eyes rolled up from below. He had expended himself very much, almost too much, in this blessing. He seemed to be praying for a renewal of strength. Judah, finding his blessing blessed out, stepped back, amazed and abashed because it had turned out that impurity was no hindrance. The uproar in the assemblage at the appearance of Shiloh and the entirely new revelation and declarations brought out in this blessing were almost uncontrolled. A loud whispering went round both within and without the tent. Outside it was even vocal. Voices were heard excitedly repeating the name of Shiloh. But all movement ceased again as Jacob once more raised his head and his hand. The name of Zebulun came from his lips. The man of 68 years put his head under the old hand. Since his name actually meant dwelling and habitation, it surprised no one that Jacob should point out his dwelling and his habitation. He should dwell at the haven of the sea, and live near the treasures of ships, and should border on Sidon. Very good. He had always wanted it, so now he got it, in a tired, perfunctory voice. Issachar? Issachar would be like a strong ass crouching down between the folds. The little asses in Cancer were his sponsors, but despite this connection, Jacob seemed not to expect much of him. He spoke only briefly of him, and in the past tense, which meant the future. Issachar saw that rest was good, and the land that it was pleasant. He was strong and phlegmatic. He thought nothing of lending his bones as a beast of burden. To serve came easy to him, and he bowed his shoulders to be laden. So much of Issachar. He touched the Jordan, so Jacob claimed to be able to see. Enough of him. Now for Dan. Dan guided the scale and judged with wisdom. So subtle was he of mind and tongue that he was like a biting adder. Jacob took occasion here, lifting his finger to give his audience a little lesson in zoology. In the beginning, when God was creating the animals, he had crossed the hedgehog with the lizard and so produced the adder. Dan was an adder serpent. A snake he was by the way, and an horned adder in the path. Not easy to see in the sand, and very tricky. In him the heroic took the form of knavery. The enemy's horse he bit in the heels, so that the rider fell backwards. Thus Dan, Bilhah's son. I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. In his exhaustion Jacob gave his sigh and ejaculated his prayer, distressed lest he should not get to the end before his end. He had begotten so many sons that in his last hour the number of them was almost beyond his strength. But with God's help he would win through. He summoned the stocky Gad, whose clothes were besown with bronze. Gadiel, a troop shall overcome you, but you will overcome at the last. Stoutly, my stout one. Now Asher. Asher, the sweet tooth, had fat land from the mountain to near Tyre. The lowlands were full of waving corn and dripped with oil, that his bread should be fat, and he should make fine ointment, such as kings send each other for their pleasure. From him came pleasure and the love of bodily pleasure, which amounts to something too. Asher, you will also be somebody, and since song came from you and joyous tidings, be praised for it before your brother Naphtali, whom I now summon beneath my hand. Naphtali was a hind who leaps over ditches and a springing doe. His was the nimble gait. He was a running he-goat when he draws in his horns and leaps. His tongue, too, was nimble. It gave glib information, and the fruits of the plain, Gennesareth, ripened apace. Of quickly ripened fruits, Naphtali, may your trees be full, and quick success, if not too great, be your judgment and lot. Then this son, too, having been blessed, stepped back into the ranks. The old man rested with closed eyes in a deep silence, his chin on his breast. And after a little, he smiled. They all saw and were touched, for they knew what summons it meant. It was a happy, yes, an artful smile, and somewhat sad withal, though it was artful too, for the love and tenderness within overcame the sadness and renunciation. Joseph, said the old man, and a 56-year-old man, who had been 30 and 17 and 9, and lain in the cradle as a lamb of the mother sheep, a child of the time, beautiful of face, in Egyptian white, Pharaoh's sky-blue ring on his finger, fortune's minion, bowed beneath the ashen blessing hand. Joseph, my scion and seed, son of the virgin, son of the dearest, son of the fruit tree by the spring, fruitful bough whose branches overhang the wall, I greet you, who is the heart of the spring, first-born bull in his adornment, greeting. Jacob had spoken loud and clear, a solemn address to be heard by all. But then he dropped his voice almost to a whisper, obviously minded, if not to shut out the public, at least to limit its numbers during this blessing. Only the nearest heard his words of farewell to the set-apart one. Those farther off only got a word here and there, and those outside, for the moment, nothing at all. But afterwards it was all repeated over and over, reported and discussed. Most dearly beloved, came from the painfully smiling lips, chosen and preferred by the daring heart for the sake of the only beloved who lived in you and with whose eyes she looks, just as once she first looked at me at the well when she appeared among Laban's sheep and I rolled away the lid for her. I was allowed to kiss her, and the shepherds shouted in delight, Lulu. In you I kept her, my darling, when the Almighty tore her from me. In your loveliness she lived, and what is sweeter than the double and the doubtful? Well I know that the double is not of the spirit for which we stand, but is the folly of the peoples. And still I yielded to that ancient mighty spell. Can one be ever and entirely of the spirit, and avoid folly? Lo, I am double now myself. I am Jacob and Rachel. She am I, who went so hardly away from you into the summoning land. For me too it summons today away from you. It summons us all. You too, my joy and my care, have already made half the journey towards that land, and yet you were once little, and then young, and were all that my heart understood of loveliness and charm. Serious was my heart, but soft. Therefore was it soft before beauty. called to the heights and to the sight of diamond-sharp steeps. Secretly, I love the gentle hills. His voice failed for some minutes, and he lay smiling with closed eyes, as though his spirit wandered in the charming rolling landscape which had risen to his eyes as he gave Joseph his blessing. When he began to speak again, he seemed to have forgotten that Joseph's head was under his hand, for he spoke of him a while as of a third person. 17 years he lived with me, and another 17, by God's mercy, he lived. Between them lay my stiffness and the destiny of the set-apart one. They lay in wait for his loveliness, and that was folly, for with loveliness wisdom was ever won. On that their strong desire was wrecked. More alluring than has ever been seen are the women who climb up to look after him from housetops and towers and windows, but they had not their desire. So it was made bitter to him, and they attacked him with arrows of ill report. But his bow abode in strength. The arms of his hands were made strong, and the hands of the everlasting held him up. Not without rapture will his name be remembered, for he succeeded as few succeeded in finding favor before God and man. That is a rare blessing, for mostly one has the choice of pleasing either God or the world. But the spirit of charm and mediation gave it to him that he pleased them both. Be not proud, my child. Have I need to warn you? No. I know your shrewdness saves you from presumption, for it is a charming blessing, but not the highest and sternest. Lo, thy dear life lies open in its truth before the dying gaze. Play and playing it was, familiar, friendly, appealingness, approaching salvation, yet not quite seriously a calling or a gift. Love pierces my heart at sight of that mingled gladness and sadness. Not so can anyone else love you, my child, who see not as the father heart can the sadness, but only the brilliance of your life.